is seldom met with,
even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Some things in training that one would think that one could just take as given and as obvious, and get on to the discussion of other matters. And certainly one would think that the subject of commitment to a teaching, to a practice, to a teacher, would come under that class of subjects. Yet one ends up speaking a lot about the importance of such commitment. In fact, the necessity of it. And usually when we talk about this, the emphasis is on the efforts that we need to make, and the fact that commitment focuses this effort in a helpful way. Without that commitment, we either aren't able to stay with the training, aren't able to take in the teaching, aren't able to find enough trust within ourselves to really extend trust to the teacher. And without that effort, without that commitment, we tend to wander in confusion. Grasping after anything that seems like it will be helpful without staying grounded in one path that will actually take us somewhere. So it's like we wander around at the beginning of all the paths and never walk down one of them and forget about the others so that we can actually make our journey. And this is all true. I want to talk this morning about another aspect of commitment that isn't as obvious, but that is actually more important and more real in the fundamental sense. A good way of approaching this is to describe again the two basic approaches in Mahayana Buddhism that our master spoke of at times, represented by the two major schools of training in Mahayana Buddhism. One of these schools is represented by the Zen tradition with its various branches. of which nowadays Soto and Rinzai are the two main forms. And the other is the Shin tradition. In Zen, the emphasis is on salvation through one's own efforts, at least so it seems. And in Shin, the emphasis is on salvation through divine grace, or so it seems. But as Rev Master so often said, it's like entering a tunnel. You have to go in at one end or the other. And whichever end you go in, you'll come to the same place. And in that place, both of these aspects exist. The aspect of making one's own effort and the aspect of faith in a greater power, faith in a greater reality, faith in the compassion and wisdom of the eternal. And the grace that one experiences as a result of that faith. I should say the grace that one comes to recognize as a result of that faith, because we all experience it, just it's not everyone who recognizes it at all times. When we speak about commitment in the way that I described at the beginning of this talk, we're giving the classic Zen emphasis, you might say. We're emphasizing our own effort in training. But it's also possible to speak about commitment from the other aspect as well, the other point of view. And from that point of view, our commitment is what gives the eternal permission to do the work within our heart. You could ask, well, why does the Buddha nature, which is our true self, need permission for anything? And the answer to that is found in another thing that Rev Master often said. The real truth does not insist on truth. The eternal, the Buddha nature, will not force truth upon us, will not force enlightenment upon us. We have to be willing to respond to its call, to its prompting, with a wholehearted yes, a wholehearted I am willing. Now, if we look at commitment in this way, as that yes, that I am willing, one of the things you can see, it takes all the striving out of it, out of our effort. It's not that through a hard slog in which we storm heaven, we achieve enlightenment. That's never what it is. It's that we, with humility, and in a context of compassion for ourselves and for others, in a context of faith that there is that which hears our cry for help, or there is that which responds with wisdom and mercy, with kindness, with sympathy to our need, that in our thoughts and in our actions and in our speech, we say yes to that. We take refuge in it. And we come to recognize its compassion and its grace for what it is and the way it works within our lives and within the lives and hearts of all beings. In this point of view, enlightenment is not a goal to be achieved. It is that which we fall back upon. When we say yes to that which is calling us home. Things in this way transforms our view of every aspect of training, transforms our view of what meditation is, transforms our view of what it is to follow the precepts, transforms our view of what it is to follow in the steps of a teacher. About similar weighty karma and about similar merit, about similar intelligence, similar in general abilities. Doing the same practice. And if one of them opens their heart in that great yes, and the other does not, all that similarity becomes, it's a similarity in appearance mostly. Because in reality one will have gone much further spiritually. This is the real reason for commitment. This is the meaning of commitment in its true spiritual sense. It's why we emphasize it. It's not just that you must stick to one way of training, to one teaching, to one spiritual path, to one teacher, to one sangha, which is true enough. You go nowhere unless you do that. But it's, why would you not do things in that way? Why is it not enough? And that's the part of commitment that is nearly impossible to communicate. The why is it not enough? The why is it not sufficient? Because what we're really speaking of in the end is not commitment as the world understands it at all. It's contentment. It is enough for me to know the eternal. I heard a mass from the young monk say so many times, I found what I went looking for. I found what is true for me. And underneath that was just this great sense of fullness. It is enough. It is enough.